This is the Pitch Fishing Academy Cricket Show number 97. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Fishing Academy Cricket Show. My name's David Hinchliffe.
And I'm Bernice.
Coming up on the show, we talk baseball mitts with a baseball and softball expert. Chris Peplow gives us some one-day spin bowling tips. And Bernice and I answer your coaching questions. You can find us on pitchvision.com.
Or alternatively, give us a call, 02088167691. Or drop us a line at our email address at mycricketcoach, that's mycricketcoach, at pitchvision.com.
That's right, and you can get myself or Berners on the Pitch Vision Twitter address, which is at pvcricketcoach. So, welcome along to the latest show. How's it going, Berners? How's things? You're in a bit of a rush today, I understand.
Yeah, rushing about. We're off to India and then off to Abu Dhabi, so it's all cricket related, all good fun. So the fires are burning.
Excellent. And this is your start of your pre-season preparation, is it?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's all systems go now. a little mini tour to get me in the spirit of things.
So we've had some discussion recently on the pitchvision.com website regarding doing umpiring and doing your stint as an umpire when you're a player. And have you ever been asked to umpire as a player?
Yeah, I'm always forced out there. It's one of those things. You don't have an umpire. You're stood out there. You don't have the stones or your counting device, and you're kind of four or five balls into the over. You're scratching your head. You don't really know what's going on. So you just call over and hope for the best.
Have you ever stood there while everyone's appealing and you're thinking, I really don't know whether it's out or not?
Yeah. Well, I had a stumping once when I was at square leg, and I wasn't actually watching. So they asked, you know, why is it not out? I said, I wasn't watching, and it all kicked off. And I said, well, you know, I don't know quite what you want me to do, but there's nothing I can do now. So just apologised and we carried on.
I try to be fair when I have my little stint, but there is quite a famous story of a few years ago in my club anyway, where we were playing a match against a side who brought their own umpire, and often those kind of umpires are worse than the player umpires.
Yeah, because they're like, they're old stalwarts in the club, and they're like, oh, this lad Jimmy, I used to play with his father back in 1933. He's not getting out LBW today, I can tell you.
We batted second, and their opening bowler was bowling massive no balls, which he was conveniently ignoring, and he gave six LBWs. So when it was my turn to go out and stand at square leg, our batsman who was cruising us to victory, because we only needed 140-odd, ran down the track, completely missed it. Wicketkeeper whipped the bails off. Of course, what do I say? Not out. Yeah. and all the players started calling me a cheat, and I thought, well, you made a rod for your own back there. So I know that's probably not the thing I should have done, but it was nice to get a little bit of revenge considering how many LBWs and how many no balls that hadn't been given. So, you know, it's the yin and yang of club cricket umpiring, isn't it, that?
It's dog eat dog out there in the middle.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a hard job. I don't know how these guys do it. I mean, it's a really hard job, but I guess there must be a passion and a love for it which is embedded within one's mindset to go and do it.
It's common nowadays to see coaches, even at the lowest club level, using baseball mitts to save their hands and catch the ball when bowlers and fielders are doing their warm-ups and there's no wicketkeeper around to help out. So we decided to catch up with a baseball and softball expert and somebody who sells baseball and softball catching gloves and mitts to get the full lowdown. This week's interview is with Bradley Jones, who's the boss of the baseball and softball shop, a company that sells baseball and softball equipment here in the UK. And that includes the ever increasingly popular baseball mitts, which are used in cricket. He's also a regular player of softball, so he uses the equipment that he sells. gloves are increasingly popular as a coaching aid in cricket, but there are lots of different ones on the market. What are your top tips to look for when you're buying a glove?
Well, the most important one is to really look at the material of the glove. It's very important if you're using them for cricket and they're going to be sort of hard wearing that you've got a leather glove. There are some sort of cheaper vinyl ones out there, but they're not going to last for a long period of time. So top tip is always look at the leather gloves, and also look at the sort of brand names. There's we sell the larger brand names of Mizuno, Rawlings, Louisville. They're all the sort of top names that you'll be looking to buy.
Are there different types of gloves that are used in different ways in softball and baseball, and does that make a difference to a cricket coach who's using it in a warm-up?
That's right, yes. You've got what's called a catcher's mitt. That's a glove which is basically a mitt, so it's got no fingers in it. That is what is used in baseball for the person that's behind the batting plate. So that's for balls that sort of come in very low to them. You've then got what's called fielding gloves, and these are, let's say, used by baseball or softball players in the actual field, whether it be on base or actually in the outfield. And they obviously have got finger holes, so you put all your fingers in the actual glove, and they're actually a different sort of shape to the catcher's mitts. But you can obviously catch those, in the air or again or low. So fielding gloves are, you know, in my opinion, are a more universal glove for cricket catching, because you can obviously use them at various heights of catching in the practice.
I've got a glove myself, and at the end of practice, I just tend to lob it in the kit bag and it goes in the storage cupboard. There's probably a better way to look after it than that, is there?
Well, what we sort of normally suggest is again, with softball is or baseball, you want to sort of keep the glove in the same sort of shape. So what you'd normally do is you sort of put the baseball or softball in the glove, and then you basically wrap the glove. Usually you use we've got certain elastic bands we sell that sort of hold it in the correct position. It just maintains it in the correct sort of shape, so that when you are opening and closing the mitt, it just keeps it, you know, in a good sort of shape. But we also use, again, what you can do to soften the gloves is we've got glove conditioning oil, and that helps sort of soften the leather and just keep it, you know, like dubbing does for football boots. It actually softens the leather for the glove.
How long does it take to stop a glove sort of feeling stiff and get it nice and soft?
Again, it depends on the type of glove. Some gloves are sort of need more wearing in than others. We've got various levels of gloves and various levels of quality. Some of the gloves are a little bit stiffer and will take, you know, perhaps a few weeks to break in. And other gloves, almost out of the bag, will be ready to sort of be sort of soft. Again, it depends on the leather. Some you've got soft leather, and some are a little bit firmer leather.
A lot of coaches struggle with the mitts. They have a few goes and they end up chasing cricket balls around the outfield because they keep missing it. They're not used to catching with a glove. Are there any tips to speeding up that process of learning how to catch?
Yeah, sure. We've got a technique that we call it the crocodile technique, which is quite a good one actually for when the balls are sort of coming along the ground. What you do is you make sure that the actual mitt is touching the ground, and then if you're a regular player and you've got the glove on your left hand, you put the left hand glove on the ground. You know, you can walk towards the ball and you use your right hand then as like a crocodile to sort of snap it over. So the idea is the ball goes into the glove. If it bounces up, hits something and bounces up, you've got your other hand to sort of close it down as such. But that's the way of sort of fielding what's called grounders or ground balls in baseball or softball. And then with regards to balls going in the air, you just want to make sure that you keep your eye on the ball. And obviously you're not catching the ball in your palm of your hand, you're catching the ball in the web. And say some gloves have actually got holes in the actual basket area of the glove, so you can actually see the ball coming into the web to catch it. And you just kind of move the glove around in a kind of clockwise or anti-clockwise motion to keep it as a sweeping motion to follow the ball into the glove.
A lot of using of the mitts will be with in cricket will be when bowlers are warming up and there's a coach standing there to catch the ball and throw it back to the bowler once he's bowled the ball. But a lot of those balls will be coming through at maybe hip height, maybe down to knee height. What angle should you be having the glove? You know, should the fingers be pointing down or up, or how should you be trying to catch the balls that are in that kind of halfway, not quite on the ground and not quite up at head height?
if it's coming that sort of low, then yes, you basically want your sort of fingers to the ground as such, and you want to be sort of crouching over the ball rather than sort of standing up, so you're sort of fairly low to the ground. Don't ever move the glove to the ball. Let the ball come to the glove. Let the ball always hit the glove. So you don't move your body around, but don't move the glove towards the ball. Always keep the glove maybe about a foot or so away from your sort of chest area or your knees area. But don't move the glove. Don't try and catch it with the glove. Just move your body forward or backward or left or right.
And those are your questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, David.
And now it's time for the ever popular coaching questions section. So without further ado, it's over to you, Berners.
David, question here from Ant. One of those ones you should be familiar with. Yeah. Old iron gloves behind the stumps there. Yeah. In my school team, we have a good wicket keeper who catches most things. However, while he's comfortable with catching normally, he seems to drop the ball every time the batsman nicks it. Ooh, blimey. That's a clanger, isn't it, eh?
Yeah.
Recently on Sky Sports News, I saw the England fielding coach, Richard Hassel, using a bat with a piece of cardboard taped onto it as a substitution for inside and outside edges. He used this while being given throwdowns with a wicketkeeper behind him. This is quite a useful training tool. But do you think this is a good drill?
I think it's a brilliant drill, yeah. You know, it simulates a nick without the ball actually needing to be nicked. You just sort of have to flick the bit of cardboard as it goes past. So it seems like the ball's been nicked, and maybe it might even deflect slightly. So if the keeper's having trouble with nicks, that'd be a perfect thing. You don't need even to be as elaborate as taping a bit of cardboard onto a cricket bat. You can just get one of those little marker cones that you see everywhere these days and have someone stand there or even a spare batting inner or wicket-keeping inner, and someone throws the ball from usually from around about where the ball would have pitched. They kneel down and throw it upwards as if it's just pitched, and the coach who's holding whatever it is, the marker cone or the inner, tries to flick the ball as it goes past, and if he flicks it, it usually deflects slightly, and then the batsman can catch it. There's also a little orange ramp type affair called a catch it, which has become very popular with wicketkeepers, which you throw the ball at it from the right angle and it deflects off it at all kinds of funny directions. So you can use that to improve your ability catching the ball when you nick it.
So really, David, anything that kind of alters the path of the ball or maybe just flicks it on the way through is a great tool for keepers, slip fielders to get their eyes going and pick up the ball from a slightly different trajectory.
Definitely. The other thing I would look at as well is the technique of the wicketkeeper as well, because when you're catching a nick, you tend to just move your hands towards it because you don't really have time to do anything else. So although you're still moving, what you'll find is the difference between a wicketkeeper taking a ball that's gone wide and has been left, the wicketkeeper will sort of shuffle across. Say it's a right-handed batsman, the wicketkeeper will shuffle across to his right and he'll take the ball under his eyes. But when the batsman's nicked it, the wicketkeeper's already set himself a lot closer to the stumps. So rather than then starting to shuffle once he set himself, just the hands and the head start to go, and you end up catching it a little bit away from yourself. So if the wicketkeeper's trying to move across to the ball rather than just let his hands ride with the ball and catch it in that way.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, you know, is he panicking when the batsman nicks it? So that's the other thing. But if he's panicking a bit, then practice is the best thing you can do anyway until you get the confidence, because good technique builds confidence.
Absolutely. And he's got another question here. He seems to be a fast bowler, and I guess this kind of answers itself if the guy behind the sticks is dropping all of his great balls all the time. But he says that he He goes to school over in Africa. He's at a boarding school there during term time. And he's not used to the weather. It's really hot there. When he runs into bowl, he's pouring with sweat after only one over. And that's even with the wicketkeeper clanging it behind the stumps every other ball. So what can you say to this lad here, David? He's pouring with sweat. He can't hold the ball. He needs some help.
It sounds like he needs to adapt slightly. That takes a little while. If you go straight from, say, you know, the very bad weather in the UK, you go straight out to 30 degrees, then that's going to take a little bit of time to adapt. So what you don't want to be doing is bowling 20 overs the day you get off the plane. You want to get yourself, if you can, build up to it as much as you can. I mean, it's never going to be comfortable bowling fast in that kind of heat, even if you live in that country. You know, if it's 35 degrees in the shade,
yeah,
then you're never going to feel good bowling.
He's like an Eskimo running in with his fishing rod over his shoulder, isn't he?
Exactly. So plenty of hydration, build up to it slowly. You know, train not as much as maybe you would want to start with, and then gradually build it up. Try not to train in the middle of the day. You know, train in the early evening when, you know, if it's summer, wherever you are, it's probably going to be light anyway.
The old Malcolm Marshall headband, something like that, the sweatbands. Anything maybe to capture the moisture away from his weeping brow.
Exactly, yeah, and plenty of fluids. You know, make sure you replace the fluids as you're sweating them out. That's really important. And fitness is a key thing as well. You might not feel like getting into the gym when it's really hot, but it's very important to get your fitness levels up, because that improves your body's ability to regulate its temperature. So it's just another benefit of exercise.
So there we go, Anne. A busy, busy summer for you over in Africa, my friend. Thanks, coach. Okay. So we've got a query here from, sounds like a big smasher from South Africa, Mikey Blom, just trying to acclimatise over here in England. Sounds like he's been out of the game for about 10 years, and he's just started playing. Obviously, fancies his chances to stick a few poms into the hedge, but it appears it's all gone top heavy at the moment. He's got a big problem. He sees the ball as a football. He's looking to smack it out the park, David, and unfortunately, he's having a bit of problems with the mental side at the moment, and particularly protecting his wicket. So he's going hard, but unfortunately, he's going home, and he just needs a little bit of guidance into getting into the zone, and the ability to bat and have some show scorecards to show at the end of it. So what do you recommend for Mikey Boy here?
Well, I'm not sure whether this is directly a mental issue, as in, you know, getting into the, I mean, obviously the zone is something that people talk about. You know, when you're batting well, you don't have to really think about it. You know, that is the important part of the zone, is you can't go, right, I'm going to go into the zone now, and then go into the zone. It doesn't quite work in that way.
You've got to have something to make you get into the zone.
Well, more than that, really, you've almost got to forget about it, because if you forget about it, then that's when you're in the zone, when you're not thinking about it. As soon as you think, oh, I'm in the zone, you're not in the zone anymore. So it's almost like you have to work at certain things and forget about thinking, oh, I'm going to try and get into the zone now.
Yeah.
So what I'd say probably would be more productive in this guy's case is that, because he thinks from his email, it seems clear to me that he thinks that, you know, he's better than the bowlers, so therefore he can smash everything all over the place. But it's not really working for him. So I think Kevin Peterson...
Back to basics for him?
Yeah, I think Kevin Peterson went through something similar, thinking, you know, it's such a good batsman, overconfident, that no one can get me out. And then he ends up, you know, putting one down deep square leg's throat. So it's a matter of going back to basics, learning, reminding yourself that it doesn't matter how good a batsman you are, you're not going to get any runs if you're in the hutch. So work on playing the bad balls and leaving the good balls, or defending the good balls. A good way of doing that is a drill that you can do in the net, where you set it up where you put two cones down in front of you in the net, and you can do this against bowlers or against a bowling machine. You put two cones down in front of you in the net on either side of the wicket, probably about halfway up the artificial on an ordinary net. and you award yourself points. So you get, if you defend it through the two cones straight, then you get, say, one run. If you leave the ball, you get, say, one run. If you flick it off your legs, you know, if it's a proper bowler and he strays and you flick it off your legs, well, that's easy. We'll call that a run as well. And if you drive it through the cones and it's a proper drive, then you award yourself four. Whether it would have gone for four or not, you know, because you've played an attacking...
Because of the shortness on the floor.
It's on the floor, exactly. If you hit it in the air, or you hit it outside the cones, you're out and you have to go back to zero.
Right.
And then the trick is to see how many runs you can get while you're batting in the net then. And the way the game's been set up, it's been set up that you block the good balls, you leave the ones that you don't need to hit, and then you play straight. You play straight off the front foot, you play straight off the back foot. And that will just get you in that mentality even when you're in the net. So that would be a good way of doing it for him, I think, probably practicing in that way.
Yeah.
You don't even have to tell the bowlers that's what you're doing. If you're in a typical English club net, you know, pre-season club net where everyone's, where it's just a free-for-all anyway, then you don't have to even tell anyone you're doing it. Yeah. You don't even have to put the cones down. You just think to yourself.
Just right, mentally.
Exactly.
Discipline, concentration.
Yeah, I'm going to work on, I'm just going to be disciplined for however my 10 minutes in the net, or however long it is. And that is that's a really effective way of getting yourself switched on to shot selection and playing the right shot to the right ball and not getting carried away just because it's, you know, just because it's outside off stump. You don't always have to throw the kitchen sink at it.
Yeah. So there we go. Mikey, back to basics, and you can start showing those boys down in Hampshire a little bit about how the Zulu plays his game. I'm sure you'll start to hit some big balls out of the park there. Thanks a lot, David.
And now it's time for the second interview of this weekend. This week, cricket-wise, we're talking to Chris Peplow, coach at Ealing Cricket Club and a former first-class cricketer who also turns out for the Unicorns, the non-professional team that compete in the professional English county 40-over competition here in the UK. Chris is a spin bowler, so we caught up with him to talk about the Unicorns, coaching and spin bowling in a one-day game. How important are the Unicorns to you?
The Unicorns is a really good idea in terms of sort of a platform for sort of ex-professionals that are wanting to get back into the game. But for me, on a personal level, I like to use it to still try and play cricket at the highest level that I can possibly play. And it keeps my profile as a coach quite high, as that's my full-time job. It's nice still to be in the sort of public eye, if you like, sort of, you know, when kids pick up the newspaper and see that you're still playing against some of the big players, you know, it's good for my reputation to get people along and come and listen to what I've got to say about spin bowling. You know, but for the younger kids that are playing, you know, that haven't quite reached the professional level, it's a really good shot window of up-and-coming talent or people that maybe got discarded too early to still show their skill sets across the professional board.
You're a spin bowler. What are the three most important things a spinner has to do when bowling in the one-day game?
Ultimately, I see the spinner as the guy that brings control to the one-day game. He's the guy that's going to bowl pretty much through the middle of the innings. And he's looking to sort of get knocked around at sort of a rate of about 4 or 5 and over. You know, hopefully maybe picking up one or two wickets along the way. So ultimately, number one is to bring control to the captain and to the bowling innings. Two, obviously it all depends on the sort of wicket that you're playing on. If you're lucky enough to come on a turning wicket, then you become the match winner. You know, the guy that's looking to take the most wickets and bowl the team out and make it extremely difficult to set a total or restrict the team chasing. You have to be quick to think on your feet. You know, sometimes you're going to get batsmen that are going to come at you hard. You've got to know what sort of field you're going to bowl to. You know, depending on what sort of batters you're going to have, those ones that are going to try and whack you out of the park and those ones that are trying to milk you. So you need to be very aware of your own game in terms of the fields you're setting, whether you're going to bowl over or around the wicket. And, you know, if you can master that part of your game, then you're going to be a difficult person not to pick in any cricket side.
You mentioned field settings there. Let's talk a little bit about that. One of the things about one-day cricket is fields can be very orthodox. What's the most unorthodox field you've ever used in a one-day game?
Well, to be honest, in the one-day game, you're pretty restricted in terms of what you're going to do, obviously, with the 5-4 restrictions. But if you come on a nice turning wicket, then for me, the most unorthodox is probably having a very packed offside field, leaving a very big gap in the leg side. This is bowling to a right-hander, turning the ball away, trying to make them play against the spin, knocking you into a very vacant area. Having the least amount of fielders on the leg side, possibly just with your deep backward square, your deep cow and your long on as your three leg side fielders, trying to get the guy to play against the spin, which is obviously a very dangerous way to play. And obviously having a nicely packed offside field, holding a good offside line. That's probably about as inventive as I would get in terms of a one-day field. Unless, again, you're bowling well, you've got a couple of wickets, the opposing side is struggling, and you might, you know, bring yourself in, you know, slip a gully and a short leg or something like that. But again, that's all sort of game dependent and what's going on throughout the course of the innings when you're bowling.
Do you prefer a batsman who is hitting out or is just trying to work you around?
For me, I'm a massive fan of somebody coming at me. I relish in the challenge of, you know, trying to outwit the batsman, trying to second guess what he's going to do. And I see that the opportunity of a batsman attacking is an opportunity for me to take wickets. In a one-day game, the emphasis is hugely on the batsman to score the runs. And if you're a consistent bowler who can land the ball in good areas with good control and variations, then, you know, the chances of you picking up wickets is highly increased. So for me, even flat wicket or spinning wicket, you know, I like to see people jumping out, playing across the line, slog sweeps, you know, all those kind of aggressive shots, which I feel puts the ball in my court for the chances of them making a mistake. So, you know, and I've had most of my successes bowling at the back end of an innings when teams are trying to top up their runs. You know, you've got your five guys on the boundary and you find yourself with a lot of people hauling out to deep square leg or to cow or long on or long off or just running past the ball. So, yeah, for batsmen to attack me is what I thrive in.
If you put your coaching hat on now for this next question, imagine you're coaching a young spinner who has obviously got talent. He turns the ball and he gets plenty of dip and all the important things that you'd want to see from a spin bowler, but he's struggling to make an impact in matches. What advice would you give him?
I think cricket in general, whether you're batting or bowling, is to have a plan. You've got to know what your strengths or weaknesses are, and you've got to stick to that plan. If bowler's getting smashed all over the place and struggling to keep his runs down, you know, you've got to explore different options, you know, over the wicket, round the wicket. You know, do you have quicker balls? You know, what's your field setting like? You know, all these sort of areas will help an individual that's struggling in one-day cricket. I don't think you can just look at the line and lengths you're bowling. You've got to be a bit broader than that. You've got to look at reading a batsman, you know, as a guy, someone that's, you know, just coming in. Is he looking to knock you down the ground? Are you bowling at a set batsman that, you know, seeing the ball well? So there's many aspects that a youngster needs to sort of take on board to sort of help develop his game while he's bowling in a one-day game.
That's about all we've got time for on the show this week. It's been action-packed as always, hasn't it, Bernard?
Yep, absolutely. Thanks for listening, guys.
We'll be back next week with some more, but don't forget we do still want your contributions. All the topics are on the website, so if you go to pitchvision.com you can have a look at the topics. But don't forget, we are interested in your comments and your feedback, and most importantly, your coaching questions. Don't forget that if you send in a coaching question or a comment, or you leave any feedback on our answer phone, you can win online coaching with Pitch Vision Academy through pitchvision.com. And the winner of this week's competition has to be Ant, because, well, it's a wicket-keeping question, and you know how biased I am to those. That's it for now. We'll be back next week. So until then, I'm David Hinchliffe.
And I'm Berners.